It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here in the 10 o'clock hour. This is our third hour today for Money Matters. Thank you for joining us. We talked today, if you missed Money Matters, of course, we talked a lot about all of the drama that the market has woken up to when it comes to Washington. This Wednesday, the Dow dropped 300 and almost 400 points. S&P 500 down about 2% for the day. So volatility is back into the fold despite very strong corporate earnings in the first quarter. We're almost completely through that, over 90% of the way reported for companies. We've seen over a 15% gain year over year with earnings. So that's very significant. And that's a big part of what has helped stabilize this market. Profits are good, and that's what markets really care about. But political turmoil has now, to some extent, started to rear its ugly head, and the market is smelling that drama. And that's why you're seeing these large days where you see the Trump impeachment odds go up to 30-some percent. Possibility of impeachment, and market comes down in the same day. We talked a lot about that in the first 2 hours, the odds on impeachment, the odds on how or if Trump stays in over the next 4 years. I think the odds overstate those possibilities. We talked about that, how emotion is clouding these very real bets in the options market that you can do with several different websites. And if you missed that, I encourage you to listen to this show via podcast, which is a quick and easy way to listen through and hear that content. You can just go to wesmoss.com under the radio tab and download today's show. It's usually up by the very next day. The next place to do that, of course, you can just go to iTunes, search for Wes Moss Money Matters, and you can easily find all of our past episodes that are up on iTunes. You subscribe to it. Again, you search for Wes Moss Money Matters. That's the easiest way to do so. If you are someone that has listened to the podcast, it's not that new in the world, but I know a lot of folks do listen via podcast and on demand, and we love that, obviously. I would love to get reviews. For a lot of years, we neglected to even talk about the availability of this show via podcast on iTunes or on the website, wesmoss.com. So please, if you have listened or you do subscribe, where you do listen to the podcast, we need some reviews up there. We've neglected to even ask about that. And I know a lot of folks listen to Money Matters via iTunes, and you really need to get some reviews up there, or else we need to do that. So I wanted to remind you, we highly appreciate that. If you appreciated this show and what it's helped you with over the years, we would appreciate some reviews on iTunes as well. Thank you so much for tuning in. Good morning. I want to talk about the amazement and the astonishing pattern and history of Amazon as a stock. And it's the 20th birthday really this past week, so there were a lot of articles about it. And I want to do that. But I also want to go to the phones here. That's a fun part of Money Matters. Phone lines open, and we'll do that. And then we'll get to Amazon. But I want to answer some questions first here live in the studio on this Sunday morning. Again, number here at the studio to give us a call, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750, the number in the studio, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We're going to go right to the phones here. Let's start with Gerald, who joins us on the line from Jasper. Gerald, what's going on? Good morning. How can we help?
Good morning, Wes. Thank you for taking my call. I do listen to your podcast, and I will have to get on there and give you great reviews.
Thanks, man.
Thank you so much for what you do.
I appreciate it. Well, how can I help today? What's going on?
Well, last week you were talking about brick-and-mortar stores, and I was wondering how the REITs now, I'm about 15% invested in REITs in my portfolio, and does this start changing? Should I start looking at maybe not being in REITs so much?
What a relevant question. I think it's a really, that's something that I think we all are probably should be concerned about. And just a couple of quick background thoughts here. And for those just tuning in, let me give you some quick context. What Gerald's asking about real estate investment trusts, REITs, REIT stands for Real Estate Investment Trust. They are a very similar structure to stocks. You can effectively classify them as stocks, but they're technically REITs. And they, the way they're structured, they pay out about 90% of their cash flow. So think of because we're in Atlanta, we all know Lenox Ball. It's owned by Simon Property Group, one of the very largest REITs in the country, in the world, quite frankly. And you think about their business model. They own the property. They own that giant departments. They own the mall. And then they lease the every little store to, whether it's Macy's, whether it is J. Crew, Banana Republic, or a jewelry store, or a restaurant. They collect that rent, and then they pass a big portion of that rent on to you as a form of a dividend distribution cash flow, right? Right now, if you looked at Vanguard REIT, VNQ symbol, low-cost way to access the whole REIT market, it pays around 4 or 4.5%. And that is fairly high current cash flow. But what's interesting about REITs, and Gerald, you probably know this because you're invested pretty heavily in REITs, it's been one of the very best asset classes to be in over the last 20 years. I just did a presentation this past week, and we had a chart of all the different, hey, over the last 20 years, the S&P 500, the bond market, gold, oil, international, REITs. Guess who wins that long-term battle over the last 20 years as highest average rate of return? It's been the REIT market, and it's averaged almost 11% a year over the past 20 years. So it's had a really solid performance and again, a big chunk of that is income. Remember, if you're getting 4% every year and it's part of the, you get a little bit of gain on top of that and you have some really nice total return. Another really important point, I want to get to the specifics and the inner workings of all the different components within REITs in just a second, but the other thought, and I probably haven't talked about this enough, Gerald, the other thing you're probably worried about or wondering is that, hey, wait a minute, when interest rates go up, is that bad for REITs? Because they pay out a dividend, they are somewhat interest rate sensitive, and they react pretty significantly to rates going higher. And we know we're in an environment, or we believe we're in an environment, where that's going to be the prevailing theme over the next couple of years. Hey, rates are, they went down this week because money went to safety and bought treasury bonds, pushed the prices up, pushes yields down. But over the next year or two, it's hard to imagine an environment where rates don't go higher. The Federal Reserve is pushing them higher, right?
Right.
Does that hurt REITs? Yes, in the short term, and REITs typically do react because they're interest rate sensitive. And you saw it during the temper tantrum or the taper tantrum, taper tantrum in 2013. We saw it after the election when rates started to spike a little bit. REITs got hit from a price perspective. But interestingly, and this is kind of spoiler alert, that REITs do even better in rising interest rate environments, Gerald. So that they've averaged 10.9 over the last 20 some years, let's say. They've averaged about 18% per annum if you isolate the periods of time when rates are going up. And here's why. Yes, higher rates will compete with the yield of a REIT. 4% doesn't look as good when the Treasury's paying 4. It looks pretty good when the Treasury's only paying 2. But the reason rates should be going up, and historically, if rates are rising, it means the economy's getting better and better, right? It's the Fed saying, hey, we can raise rates because the economy's pretty good. Well, REITs are economically sensitive. So if the economy's strong, a place like Simon Property Group, that owns Lenox Mall, despite, let's say, the retail apocalypse we're going through and you've got retailers going out of business, BB and BCBG and the Limited and Wet Seal. But if you think about it, if the economy is good, they've got a really good shot of just replacing them and saying, okay, well, we're not going to have a teen apparel retailer here anymore. We're going to swap that out for another retailer that has a better handle on the consumer. And hey, by the way, the consumer's in pretty darn good shape. Just because retailers, brick and mortar, some of those isolated retailers are not in good shape, it doesn't mean that the consumer isn't in good shape. We talked about that. So what does a company like Simon Property do? Well, they get new tenants. And those new tenants in a really strong economy, they have a lot to choose from, and they might even be able to raise the rent. So that's part of the reason we've seen historically REITs do even better when rates are going up. Now, back to your original question. If you look at the REIT index, yes, one of the biggest, if you go to VNQ, one of the biggest holdings is Simon Property Group, right? Mm-hmm. But you've got to remember that that's only one piece of the pie. REITs are the entire complex of commercial property. And even though retail is part of that, and malls are part of that, there's a lot more to that marketplace. So if you think about public storage, you think about, you go by the side of the highway, you see these public storage type companies, that's a name of a company. You think of a place, these property management companies, you think of the hospital REITs or healthcare related REITs like Welltower. There's a lot more to the marketplace. Hotels, so host hotels and resorts. There's a lot of other REITs that are not tied directly to the consumer. They're tied to other industries, if you will. And when you're buying the REIT market, I think part of the success of that market has been that even though each one of these individual REIT areas, apartment complexes do well, at certain periods of time, department stores might do well. You've got a lot of balance within that marketplace, Gerald. So just because retail's getting hit right now doesn't mean the whole REIT complex, which is multiple sectors within the broader context of real estate investment trust, commercial property in many forms, doesn't mean that the whole complex is going to get hit. In fact, as rates go up, it might even do better. 15% is pretty high for an allocation of REITs. So you probably have a fairly high risk tolerance. But I still think that because of the diversity within commercial property in America, hotels to apartment complexes to department stores to public storage, I still think long term it's a really good place to get income and then a little bit of a lift or total return as well, despite the thought that rates are going to continue to go up over the next several years. We're going to continue to go back to the phone. Gerald, by the way, thank you for your great call. We're going to go back to the phones here. News, weather, traffic, quick break, straight, and then more Money Matters right here. News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
Now here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here, WSB Radio. Raining outside. Not the most beautiful day, but you know what? I'm fine with a little bit of rain today. Cools down a little bit. I loved yesterday after it kind of just cooled everything down. I usually have kids here in the studio, but today, because I'm here for 3 hours, Luke and Ben both said, "Dad, that's just too much. That's just too much of a punishment to be in the studio for 3 full hours with you today." Even my wife, Lynn, today, she just said, "Wes, you can't do that to the kids. There's just not enough. There are not enough Oreos in the vending machine to get those boys into the studio. They'll go crazy." And sometimes it's a lot to handle a radio show and kids swirling around in here like a daycare. So she's probably right. We've got other kids listening. So Colby Smith on the way to soccer practice, just tweeting live to WSB Radio. Colby's only 8. And his dad, Brian Smith, good friend of mine, he's getting his kids early to finance. So he's already thinking about college. He's already been saving. And you never know. We might actually have a podcast audience with the 7 and 8 year olds that are tomorrow's 18 and 20 year olds listening to the show. We had a couple calls today from folks in their 20s asking about accessing 401k money, paying off student loan, you name it. This show isn't just for those that are in retirement. Yeah, we're trying to think about how do you get to retirement a little sooner than we think. That's the title of my book. You can retire sooner than you think. 5 money secrets of the happiest retirees. And that's an awful lot of fun. But I can't tell you how many folks have read the book and said, "Wes, I wish I started this stuff when I was like 25. I wish I was 30. Well, maybe we start even younger than that. Let's set the expectation to go even younger when it comes to financial education and saving money, because it just makes it easier. Saving money in America and getting to the place where you have financial freedom, just so hard to do unless you start young. You can still catch up, though. I have families that were basically starting from zero in their late 40s, even 50, and then they hit their haymaking period of time in their income, and they've saved $1.5 million, $2 million before they retired, and they've been able to do it before 65. So it can happen. And there's hope to that. We're going to continue on here. I want to talk about the amazement and the astonishment of Amazon, the Amazon effect, what that stock has done. It's a 20-year anniversary on that. We're on Twitter at WesMoss365. WESMOSS365. The website, WesMoss, WESMOSS.com. Stay tuned. More Money Matters straight ahead right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. 36 minutes past the hour. Yeah, it's a little cloudy today, a little rainy today, and that's okay. It's going to be 80 degrees today, thunderstorms during the morning. Give way to cloudy skies this afternoon, high around 80, winds 5 to 10 miles an hour, chance of rain 80% scattered throughout the day. Good morning. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. So the phone line's open. We will go to the phones here in a minute, answer your questions, whether it's about 401k or IRA or income investing, whether it's an asset class or an investment or a fund or an ETF that you have that you're questioning or wondering about. Hey, rates are going up, Wes. What's going to happen? We're here to help with that question. Might be a pension or a lump sum question. It might be a required minimum distribution question. Well, we're here on a Sunday morning. It's a fun part of Money Matters, what we do here. And it's one of the last shows we believe in the country that we know of that's truly objective advice here on Sunday morning to help. With that, again, number in the studio, 404-872-0750. Or out of state, Texas, California, Washington, Michigan, Pennsylvania listening, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let's talk about Amazon just for a minute. And I just pulled, well, let's just go over some of these numbers. So 20 years ago, this past week, Amazon went public, May of 1997. Back then, so let's go back about 20 years. There are about 7,500 publicly traded stocks in the United States. And how many indexes were there? There were like a handful. The S&P 500, the Dow, the NASDAQ, of course. Back then, it was the Lehman Brothers Bond Aggregate Bond Index. It's the Barclays Bond Aggregate Bond Index. There are a handful of these indexes, indices really, is really what I should say, is indices. Today, which this is almost hard to believe, there are only about 4,000 publicly traded stocks in the United States. So we've gone from 7,500 all the way down to 4,000. Part of that is that, yes, you've got some companies that have gone out of business, but then you have giant companies that merge. Two big stocks merge into one. We've written about that. And that takes a company away because now both companies are trading under one symbol and it's a giant conglomerate. And there's been a lack of IPOs, and you've got big companies that have not they've chosen not to go public. Airbnb, still private. Uber, still private. So there has been a real change in the dynamics of how many publicly traded companies there are out there. So that has been shrinking. But the number of indices around the world, it's ballooned. And now there's over 5,000 indices. It's hard to even believe there are more indices that track stocks than there are individual stocks. Again, does that make the market confusing for investors? I think it does. That makes it even more difficult to figure out. There's not just one index to track. If you want to be an index investor, sure, you could just do the S&P 500. But if you're doing the S&P 500, you're investing in only about 10% of publicly traded stocks and bonds around the world. So you're choosing to just hone in on that one particular index. So that goes back to this big argument about active versus passive investing. I'm a big believer that the real answer to that question, what's better, active, passive, is just good low cost passive and low cost active, as those two worlds have to some extent merged together. And there's a gray zone between actively traded mutual funds have come down in price, ETFs, exchange-traded funds. Some of them have become more active and a little bit more costly. But the key here is to keep your costs low. Most investors can't just sit in an index for most of their investing life. It just emotionally doesn't work for most people. For some people, it's fine. But for most people, it's not realistic. So let's go back to Amazon. If you put $10,000 in Amazon back when they went public, back in 1997, what's remarkable about this is that it's worth $4.9 million today. $10,000 turns into $4.9 million today. S&P 500 10,000 turns into 30,000 over the same period of time. 10,000 Macy's during that same exact period of time. Obviously, there's been a dynamic shift between online retail and physical retail, particularly in department stores. Macy's 10,000 has turned into, well, 10,000. So it's gone effectively nowhere over 20 years if you have invested in that company. $10,000 in Apple way back 20 years ago, now worth about $2.5 million. So there's been this remarkable shift in what's happened around the world. And to me, there's a real commentary on what that means for investors. So let's look at how, yes, it would have been great to put 10 grand in Amazon, and now today it's worth about almost $5 million. But let's think about the dynamics of what's happened during that run. How much stomach would you have to have had in order to totally hang on to Amazon over that period of time? Well, let's go back and look at some of the drops. So these are drops that will test your faith as an investor. There was a 62% drop in 1999. So if you had $1 million worth of Amazon, it went down by $620,000. Tough to stomach. In the year 2000, there was another drop, this time 83%. Again, $1 million would have dropped by $830,000. Wow, that hurts. In 2008, there was a 64% drop. There's a 30% drop, 30 and 31% drop in 2010 and 2011. Even last year, which was a really good market for the broader market, there's a 32% drop somewhere in there. Incredible volatility to be in a stock that has effectively changed our economy. It's if you get to point to one company, you could easily argue that Amazon's had more impact on our economy than any single individual store, probably since Walmart. Probably since the big box revolution of Walmart and really in Home Depot, Amazon has changed the marketplace more than any other company that I could really argue over the last 20 years. Think about that. Let's look at the comparison between those two companies. So Amazon market cap versus Walmart market cap. The market cap, remember, is just the price of the stock times how many shares are outstanding. It's the total economic value in the marketplace of a company. Total market capitalization. 1997, Walmart was worth about $80 billion of market cap when Amazon was basically just getting started. This is 20 years ago. Today, Walmart, 2017, Walmart worth about $230 billion. So it's grown pretty considerably, $230 billion. And they have about 2.3 million employees. Amazon's now worth about $450 billion. That's with a B. It's close to a half of a T word, the trillion. $450 billion. And they have about, or only 350,000 employees. Think about that. Think about the number of people to market cap, and let's look at that as a comparison. Well, let's look at a measure that is called market cap per employee, which I think is fascinating. Look at the top 20 companies. These are companies that have the highest value, market capitalization value per employee. And let's compare that to the bottom 20 companies that have the lowest market cap per employee. So we're looking at the top 20 companies by market cap employee. That list, if you were to isolate the top 20 of those companies, so they have the highest market cap per employee, that's grown at 99%. Total return over the last 3 years. It's grown 260% over the past 5 years. The companies that meet that criteria. The bottom 20 of these companies, this is, again, we're measuring the ratio of market cap to the number of employees. Bottom 20 in the marketplace, and I'm going to give you some of these names in a minute, 7% over 3 years versus 99%. And only 74% rate of return over 5 years versus 260% for the companies that are the that look the best or have the highest market cap per employee. So who's in this camp here in this study? Well, let's go to companies that have the highest cap per employee or market value per employee. Cabot Oil and Gas is actually the number one company in this. They have a they have only about 420 employees, so it's tiny from an employee's perspective. But they have an $11 billion market cap. So that's about $27 million per employee. Facebook is on the list, $25 million per employee. Visa is on the list, $19 million per employee. Gilead Sciences, $9.5 million per employee. So it's a pretty interesting list. It's not just tech companies. Interesting that the number one company here is an oil and gas company, followed by Facebook, which is a tech company. EOG, which is another energy company, Visa, Reynolds American, Altria, Netflix, Monster Beverage on the list, Vertex Pharmaceuticals, Celgene, MasterCard, and so forth. On the bottom of that list, let's look at the bottom group for a second. The worst ratio is actually Macy's, which is very interesting as we talk through this comparison to Amazon. Macy's has 148,000 employees, with an average market cap per employee of about $48,000. So it's a $7 billion company with 148,000 employees, average market cap per employee only about 50 grand. Again, remember, let's go back to the Cabot Oil and Gas, $27 million per employee versus 50,000 per employee. So very stark difference between these labor intensive, heavy employee oriented companies. Darden, the restaurant group, on the list, only 62,000 per employee. Walmart, as a direct comparison, $110,000 per employee. Advance Auto Parts, 144,000 per employee, versus this list of companies, and Amazon's not actually in the top 20, but companies like Facebook, EOG, Visa, Reynolds American, Netflix, pretty interesting group of companies relative to the market cap. So market cap per employee. Heavy labor intense businesses have been an enormous underperformer over the last 1-3-5 year basis. Companies that have done more technically with less, those are companies that we've seen skyrocket over time, at least in the last 5 years. Interesting commentary on the dynamics and the shift of how our economy works here in the 21st century. Hey, you've tuned into Money Matters. Good morning. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning to take your calls, your questions, to try to dovetail Washington politics into what's happening on Wall Street, try to help you become a better income-oriented investor. I look at investing as a really simple formula. It's total return. That just means it's growth plus income. It's difficult to control the growth in any given month, week, year. It's a lot easier to control the income. So I know income is that comes from dividends and it comes from interest and it comes from distributions. And you start the year with a 3-4% cash flow or yield. Well, there's a very high degree of certainty that that'll come in throughout the year. The growth side, again, it comes in fits and starts. We have great years like 2016. We're having a decent year growth-wise 2017. But it's less predictable. So I like to at least control what we can control, and that's the income side. More Money Matters, by the way. You've tuned in to News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. More Money Matters after news, weather, traffic, straight ahead.
Now back to Wes Moss and the money and investing advice you need.
Welcome back to Money Matters. A lot to do in a short period of time. First of all, remember to pick up your Sunday edition of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Sunday edition of the AJC, hundreds of dollars worth of coupons. And then the Tuesday edition, in the front of the lifestyle section, I write about the I-85 bridge collapse and how GDOT and C.W. Matthews literally pulled our economy out of the fire. This could have been devastating for the Atlanta economy with traffic. We were already bad traffic went to apocalyptic after the bridge collapse. And I really was worried that we were going to have an economic city disaster on our hands. And thankfully, we've escaped that. There are so many, history is littered with missed deadlines and over budget infrastructure product examples. I talk about one of them in the article. The Denver Airport is an example. Now, this was a smaller scale than the Denver Airport, but the fact that it went ahead of schedule, relatively rare, and it could have been so much worse. So we're thankful for that. And I write about that in the AJC that'll be out this Tuesday in the living section. With that, WSB weekend prize pack, third caller, 404-741-0750. It's a pair of tickets to see the B-52s with the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra on September 14th at Atlanta Symphony Hall. Again, a pair of tickets to see the B-52s with the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra on September 14th, Atlanta Symphony Hall. 404-741-0750. If you'd like to find me and the Money Matters team or take our early retiree happy retiree quiz, you can find it on wesmoss.com, or you can email me directly from wesmoss.com. That's WESMOSS.com. Contact section, upper right hand corner. Those emails come straight to me if you'd like to sit down and talk about your own particular situation and how it relates to money, investing, you name it. We're here to help. Stay tuned to the best programming on the planet for the rest of the day. Monica Matthews live today from 1 to 3. Faith, politics, religion, love. You will love her. Stay tuned right here. News 95.5 at AM 750. WSB.